phone with my boss about recruiting. So I have tick sheets and activity and all that stuff complex-wide for 2023.
You got a new boss, or did somebody wake him up?
I think someone woke him up. Yeah, I think that's it. I think we had a recruit goal for the complex of 8 recruits, and I think we got one. I think was the for the year. So he's getting it from his boss. So trickle down to us.
What's
But
the complex? What's the complex called?
this is the Atlanta Perimeter Complex.
That's interesting. It's a big complex then, right?
Pretty good size. I think we have 3 big branches in Atlanta, and we've got Madison, Sugarloaf, Columbus, Macon, Peachtree City, Alpharetta, Gainesville. They opened a Gainesville office with some Merrill Lynch guys. That was in November of 21. Got them. So I guess that's not counting towards his goal. Anyway, yeah, it's a pretty big complex.
So you got tick sheets.
Well,
The
we
old
got some
tick
kind of
sheet.
activity sheet. So, and
I
look, I'm happy to call these people.
remember that. Well, remember the guy you and I were talking about, right? The big guy that you liked and that he wanted you to go work for him and you wanted him to go to work for you and
Yeah, John Schinkel, he's on the list.
well, I just think that's that actually would make sense for him.
So, too. So, we, in fact, I just took his client to New York last week, and that was a weird, it wasn't. Guy is just so his wife and my wife and me just are like really connected, strong connection is great, and she'll probably bring us her money. It's probably flowing our way. With the guy, with the client, husband, he is just he's a piece of work. He's hard to read, he's hard to deal with, he's friendly enough and things, but he didn't give away, he didn't show any of his cards basically. I mean, he was interested, he was engaged, but at the end of the day, we didn't get any buying signals like he wanted to
Yeah.
move all of his money to us or anything like that. And he's got you can tell there's something going on. My wife picked up on it right away that there's something between him and his wife. Is he's just, she is. My wife thinks she's 100% dependent on him, but got money of her own, but she is very dependent on him. Like the she's subordinate to him, subordinated to him in a big way. There's not a. It's and he said a few things just you would ne I would never, and I would suspect you would never say about your wife or to your wife in mixed company with anybody. He would just make remarks to her, and you could tell it was a condescending kind of remarks.
That's a bad relationship then.
Yeah, and so like my wife said, "Now, how did you?" She said, "How did you even get close to this guy? How do you even have this relationship?" Because she didn't really know much about him, because of the client, and it was a referral from an attorney, that I do business with. And but he's just, I'm wondering if he. Anyway, I'm just wondering if he's. I don't know. I don't know. And in fact, she made the comment to us one time, to me and my wife together. She said, "I just wish I knew what was going on in his head sometimes. Like hard to map out what he's thinking and where his brain is most of the time. So anyway, it was a good experience. I don't know where it's going to go, though.
Yeah, it was a good training experience for you. Chalk it up to that.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Next time, take somebody different.
Yeah, no doubt. Seriously. Take somebody different. And,
there's nice people out there that you can deal with. I mean, that he falls under the customer. He's a customer, not a client.
No doubt. Yeah. And one of my clients that came in today, you can't see it, but there's they brought some gifts over, you know, a bottle of wine and things like that. And they've been clients of mine for a long time. And, you know, there's all sorts of talk that, she's the one, I may have told you, she knitted a hat for one of my clients out in California. Did I tell you that story? I've got a client who has cancer, and we were doing a Zoom call, and this client came in. She's Hungarian, and they showed me a picture of her granddaughter with this hat on, and she said, I knitted that hat. I said, it looks so warm. I said, I wish I had one of those to give to my client that I was on the call with. She has cancer, she's lost all of her hair. I said, do you have any more? Can I buy one of there? Are you going to sell these things or whatever? And she was so moved. She said, I'm going to start making this hat tonight. You know, you'll have it soon, and we're going to send it to her. And that's a client. And then she came back in today, and, you know, her and her husband. And then she shared with me, they wanted me to walk out to the parking lot with them so they could talk. She has been diagnosed with breast cancer.
Oh, God.
So, you know, she's on the front end of that, and, you know, you just stand out in the parking lot. And you know, these people, we connected because of they found me through two ways, church and on the internet. You know, I had my website, but they knew that I went to the same church that they did. So they actually proactively looked for me. Been close ever since. Those are the clients that I really love and enjoy working with, you know.
All right. So one of the things, and I keep, you know, giving you ideas. I'm going to stop the recording now if I can. Now, why could I do it the other day and I can't now? All I did was the other day was just click on it. All right. Forget it. I was going to, but anyway, one of the things that you can do in the new year is to make up that spreadsheet of customers, clients, advocates, ambassadors. And then you can throw in suspects if you want to in the front of that. But the idea is that by the end of the year, you want to get rid of all your customers and make them all clients. And then see how many ambassadors you have and how many advocates you have. And just constantly be working on that. Kind of keep it in your top drawer and then just bring it out and look at it and then work on it. Because you're calling all your clients every month. You should be moving them from left to right. So on every call, the idea is, how am I going to move that client from left to right? What aren't they doing? All right, so the definition of a client is somebody that pays you a fee, does 1242, has a written financial plan, and takes your advice.
Okay.
And if they don't fall into those categories, you got a problem. And a lot of times we just, like that woman is just accepting her role in life, right? The wife. She's accepted the abuse that she's taking. Mental, psychological. It's just abuse, right? He's an abuser. He's a control freak. And I mean, I don't know all of that, but I'm just assuming from what you said that he's in control of the money. He's in control of everything and tells her what to do and treats her like an employee, not even a good employer. He just treats her like a regular employee.
Around that word narcissist, you know?
Oh yeah. And it's the worst narcissist. There are nice narcissists and then there are negative, nasty narcissists.
Yeah, right. This is kind of to the nth degree of narcissist.
Yeah. And he doesn't have any room in his life for anybody but himself. So he's, you know. So you're not going to fix him. So you make a decision, you know, is he worth it? And, you know, am I there for the wife? Is it worth it for me to be there for the wife? I don't know. You have to make some of those decisions yourself, but he doesn't fit into the client category. So, you know, you can accept a little bit of that, but you shouldn't accept too much.
I mean, I told my wife if I didn't already have him as a client and I knew him now like I know him now, you know, I wouldn't have taken on the relationship in the first place.
Right.
He doesn't fit. But he is one of those people that I thought I would get to know him better. Well, I've had an opportunity to try to get to know him better.
Right.
Maybe something will change here. I don't know, but
I would put him on probation. And just say, look, you know, I'm going to give him so much time and then I'm cutting him loose.
I'm going to have to.
Because he clearly doesn't listen, right? He doesn't take your advice.
Strange. I mean, I think he does take my advice, but he has always got and I don't mind him having a different view of things. You know, there's something about having a conversation and he's got this sense about, or you get the feeling that he thinks of himself as the smartest guy in the room at all times. You know, he is the smartest guy, no matter what anybody else says, you know.
Little Trump action.
I did have a couple of people that he really, there were a couple of people who presented that he really gravitated towards. But anyway, that's not.
I mean, look, I don't know the situation. I don't know him, and I don't know. I mean, I tolerated some people, but, you know, would I today? No. I fired a client and he thought I was terrific. He was just terrible. He was a terrible leader, terrible boss, terrible everything. And I worked really hard to try and fix things and it's a complete waste of my time. So goodbye.
Sure.
Yeah.
I loved his wife. My wife loves his wife. She's fantastic.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can always fire him and say, look, you know, if you ever need me, Mrs., call me. Not a good fit for me and your husband, but love to do business with you. But a lot of times those wives are very protective. You think, you know, I've found the biggest screw up guys, their wives, if they stick it out, they're protective of him.
Mm-hmm.
They're in. They're all in.
And I can see that. I mean, I saw it, especially when I heard her talking to other people about him. You know, so she is. She endures it. Not sure how, but she does. She endures it.
Yeah.
I know this is being recorded, but literally on Thursday morning when I woke up for the round of meetings that we were going to have, I had such a felt like it was just a bizarre experience with them, because we were with them the whole day, essentially, the day before on Wednesday.
Right.
I prayed, dear Lord, whatever, you know, is supposed to be delivered in this meeting, let's just, you know, that it goes smoothly. Let's just, you know, I don't think that I could spend another day with this guy. I mean, it was that painful. And my wife, the whole time, I could just hear her almost shaking her head, like, how did you even get in with this guy? He was just so intense, and he's just so, you know, he would disappear for long periods of time on his phone, you know, almost like he's playing everybody off each other. I got a sense that he is probably, you know, he sold his business for a lot of money, right? North of $100 million. So he netted out roughly $100 million. I think his net worth is like $111 million on paper. He had all that in investable assets. Now he has bought four other businesses, all of those businesses. So he bought them using his own assets. He bought them using leveraging his assets. And when he bought these assets, he bought leveraged assets. So he bought the notes that were associated with those businesses too. So whatever they've got on the books. When we looked at the balance sheet, there's a lot of debt on the books. And I'm wondering, because mainly what he wanted to talk about was, you know, is there a way that somebody could look at, you know, doing some kind of mezzanine kind of a debt or something with an equity kicker kind of thing. I mean, he kind of kept bringing that up. In a sense, he was playing off of us, you know, trying to get that, well, I'm going to do this. Can y'all do this? You know, kind of thing. Can we work something out? At one point, I got the sense, and I didn't really get it until Thursday night, and we had a Davis Advisors. I know you've worked with Davis before, but Davis Advisors, we've got probably $2 million of this guy's money with Davis. And so I called and said we were on our way up there, and, you know, would they like to host dinner? And they were very gracious. They wanted to take me out. I do pretty good business with Davis, and to help with the client and everything like that. Sure, they were all about it, and very nice people. And we were sitting at the table. Conversation flipped quickly, and he asked, essentially, do they have an appetite to buy his kind of offering? You know, it was like all of a sudden, like he was selling back to them, you know, and the guy, I think, was a little taken aback, you know, somewhat, but he was very cordial to the guy and said, you know, you never know. Let's, you know, we'll see kind of thing, and left it open-ended. But it was a strange deal. The whole thing was strange.
Sounds to me like he's going to be in trouble here.
I think he may be in trouble. That's the weird sense that I got, is that if something doesn't start to materialize, you know, has he over-leveraged himself? He's got all these assets, but they could quickly become non-producing assets.
I had a friend of mine who retired from Merrill Lynch, and he invested in three businesses and unfortunately used his own equity, and all three businesses failed, and he's now on Social Security.
Wow.
After being, you know, regional director and had to sell his house. And
yeah.
Imagine that. I mean, you go from, well, maybe he's only worth, let's say, $10 million, but it's still $10 million, right? Now it's zero. He's living in an apartment in San Francisco and, you know, just has nothing. So you really don't want to use your own money. It's a rookie mistake.
But I've thought too, whenever we first started talking, he said, you know, basically we got $100 million, right? And so he was looking at the time to, you know, something, invest $10 million, I think, at first. And he was talking about the stocks that he'd done. And I said, do you have anything in fixed income? Have you ever thought about doing, you know, tax-free bonds or anything like that just to, you know, with some of your money? And he doesn't want to talk about fixed income at all. He doesn't want to know about it, doesn't want to discuss it, nothing. He just wants stocks. And he wants to be, in his mind, he is long-term oriented. He's out there on the risk spectrum. And so I thought, okay, well, that's fine. You got a long-term. But then when he started doing these deals to buy companies, he started leveraging the assets. Well, you know, right when you start to leverage up the assets, your time horizon can go to this afternoon, you know, really, if things go against you, if you borrow too much. A lot of things just didn't add up to me, and they still don't add up. I'm trying to make sense of it all. I Googled him when I got back. You know, I got a little bit more in depth as far as putting specific names. And he was involved in a lawsuit, looked like for non-performance of one of his ends of the bargain in there. And which I think they have remedied all that stuff, but why did you have to go to court with it? So if he was my client, I would know all that, you know, wouldn't withhold things like that from me. I've got to go find it. I had to go on and find like the court case stuff on our court dockets here or whatever that were, they were available, but it's strange. I don't know. But anyway, it's just a weird.
Do you know he's got a Merrill Lynch broker?
Yeah, Merrill Lynch. Yes, Stiefel. Stiefel Nicholas. So I know John, the Stiefel guy over there pretty well.
You probably.
And I also know the judge that was on the case too.
You might have a conversation with him. Just say, you know, I'm a little concerned compliance-wise here. Sounds like to me he may be leveraged up. What's your sense?
Yeah, I can do that. He's given us permission to talk to each other.
Yeah, just from a compliance point of view, you know, it's just one of those things. It's it's like he's got lines of credit against securities, you know, securitized loans, and then he's got margin, and then he's got this, and then he's got mezzanine financing, and he's got this. I mean, he could be any day now looking to, you know, and you don't have any liability here, but you know, if you got $2 million with you, I could be gone tomorrow.
Good. No doubt.
You know.
The other thing that was weird, so we left on Wednesday. He called me on Monday, and he said, hey, this isn't a big deal, but I need to tell you. I need to let you know. And so I want your take on this. I need to let you know. And he said, this doesn't involve any paperwork on y'all's part. Said that, you know, I have this securities-based loan against my assets with Morgan Stanley. The company that he had done the deal with that bought him out, they're stepping in as a second lien holder against this asset over here. Said, you guys don't need to file anything, but I needed to let you know. So I've got to go back. This is, I haven't even had time to do anything with it yet, but I need to ask my compliance person, I guess, is there anything that we need to do about that? Makes me think that he's had to somehow in this lawsuit so they've got some kind of note or something that must be securitized by land holdings, all I can figure out, I'm trying to relate it all to this court case that I saw. Land holdings that include these lots that he owns, and he is supposed to be selling those lots, or as part of this master agreement to sell lots to this builder, this big company that bought them. But he was not; they were withholding those lot sales, and I don't know if I don't know how that's interconnected. If that was actually it's supposed to be their land, or whose it is, and encumbered his assets some way in the lawsuit. I just don't know. I couldn't flesh out all the details, but something has obviously changed pretty quick based on that lawsuit.
Yeah. I remember he was the developer or whatever, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
So developers develop and developers love leverage, and developers believe the world is always going to be going north. Mm-hmm. And they always fail. So you're if you buy a big development, it's usually on the third developer you make money. You know. So yeah, I would definitely, the more I'm hearing you, the more I heard securitized loans. I sort of made that up myself, saying might be securitized loans. Securitized loans are, you got a whole portfolio made up of Microsoft and Amazon and Apple and everything else and Adobe, and they're all winners, but they're all down 40 and 50%.
Yeah, now they've gotten smoked this year. And I've got him. I've got him diversified, but still over down 20% this year, being up last year. So, because we've got international, we've got a little emerging markets, we've got relative value. The bulk of it's relative value, but so 50% of it is U.S. relative value, and 50% is international. And out of that international, probably 20% of that is emerging markets, or not 20%, but it's 20% of the half, so 10% of his overall that's here is emerging markets, and it's all gotten whacked this year. So anyway, it just was a weird, the whole thing is a strange deal. I need to call John and just
say I have this hair on the back of my neck's going up. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling my spidey sense is kicking in.
Yeah, it really is. Anyway, all right. So we did have a good good meeting. So the guy up in LaGrange is ready to start partnering.
Yeah.
So that conversation went really well. I think I met with you on Monday afternoon, and then we had a meeting on Tuesday morning.
Right.
So we sort of agreed in principle what we're going to do, and my follow-up now is to come back and help him do a book review.
Yep.
Sort of like what we talked about.
Yep.
We can figure out, I said, you need to figure out who actually pays you, who are your real clients in all this, and then let's start to segregate. And under a certain threshold, we're going to get our Kathleen involved in, running plans and seeing what she can cultivate from that business. And that will ultimately drop into partnership.
And, if we charged a reasonable fee instead of 3/8 or whatever he's getting now for transactional business.
Right.
What would that do to the revenues?
And that would move the needle big time.
Yeah. Look, we were talking today. I was talking with an independent, RIA kind of guy. And he's, I said, how much time does a client take? So, well, between when you're doing financial planning like I'm doing, the amount of work that I'm doing with your 1242s and our financial planning, he said it probably takes between 40 and 60 hours a client.
Well, that's probably about right. I mean, I would guess. Let's see. I mean, you have to really do the math. I can say that, and there's physically probably not enough hours in the year to do that.
Well, and that's why I need to know those numbers, because, I mean, that's a lot more than I've been planning on. I've been talking about between 10 and 20 hours, and then, you know, I sort of said with, it's not 1242 anymore, it's more like 442, not 12, because if you're doing it right and you're sending an email with the agenda and then you're calling to confirm the appointment the day before and then you're calling and then you're sending an executive summary and then your assistant's following up on the executive summary to make sure the client's doing it. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's 50 contacts a month. At least three of those are phone calls. So
I mean, so realistically, I mean, just thinking about a 40-hour work week.
Right? Yeah, it's 240 hours. You got 240 working hours.
Right. So you're talking about 20 hours per client, 20 to 21 hours per client.
And that's, generous. I mean, it's really, this guy's saying between 40 and 60 hours a client.
I don't think it's possible, because you're talking about then you'd be working 80 hours a week.
I know.
Right? Can't do it. It's not, I mean, your 80 hours a week would be for a 40 hour per client. You're now, if he stretches that over a 2 year period, I could probably see that, because in the beginning, you're going to spend a lot more upfront time doing the
financial planning, right?
You're going to do more maintenance work after that first year. So it depends how many new clients he brings in, I guess. So what are the activities? It's always the upfront stuff that takes the most time. Always. Almost always.
Right.
Life change, something like that that comes up. Then if he takes his team, I guess that's the other thing, is if he is doing that much work for a client, he's got to have a partner that's essentially doing the same thing he is for the same client. Right?
Well, he's given up. He's got a financial planner that takes the information, does the financial plan, that spits it back to him, then he presents it. And then he delegates, you know, in the executive summary, he delegates to the different people what they're supposed to do, and he follows up on those things.
Okay, so he could be right. I mean, the client could be getting that much, not directly from him, but
from that, he's considering everybody on the team.
Yeah, well, that makes more sense then.
Right. It's different costs per hour, but.
No doubt, yeah. Pretty impressive, though.
Yeah, I mean, he charges, though. He charges $10,000 for planning for every client every year. And then he charges whatever the fee is for managing. It considers a minimum of $10,000 for the fee. So his minimum fee is $20,000.
So is his minimum client size a million? Is that what he's doing?
Yeah, he's got at least that. And he's he's only got 40 clients at this point.
Okay. That makes more sense, too. if he's that involved with 40 clients, there's no way, you know, physically, I guess, without leveraging it, you could do 100 clients, right? That's like a beautiful
business. He's going to try and get to 70. And this goal, my goal for him was 70. I just don't know how much, you know, I got to know what the capacity is here. And maybe he's doing more than, I mean, he's clearly doing a lot of financial planning. You know, and he spends time with the CPA and make sure that everything is going well there and, you know, all that relationship stuff. And the one thing he said to me was he made a mistake. He wasn't, when he's opening the account, so the first thing I do, even before I open the account, is call the CPA. So I want the CPA to know immediately that there's been a change. And I want to develop a good relationship with the CPA.
Did you say that he thought that was a mistake?
His mistake was he waited. He said everybody waits to tell the CPA or never tells the CPA.
Right.
And he said, you know, and the CPA said to him, you know, I'm always the last to know. Thanks for calling me ahead of time here. Because it can affect, you know, can affect, I mean, there, you know, a lot, you do a lot for the CPAs today. You know, they do a lot of the firms do a lot of their taxes for them.
And sometimes they aren't even aware. If it's a new relationship too, they don't know to look for, you know, CPAs are pretty regimented in that they,
right, they don't look for the documents or the link to us, right? So you're linking the account and getting them the information they need on for taxes for, you know, like Supernova, my CPA does all my, she basically has by the end of the year, she knows exactly what my profitability is, what my taxes are going to be and everything else. I don't even have to send her anything anymore. She gets everything between Linda, my CSA and her. They basically do it together, you know.
Where are you today? You're back at,
I'm back in Nashville.
You moved
back. Tomorrow. Don't ask me. I'll be tomorrow. I'll be in Florida. I was up here for the Nutcracker.
Oh, you were? Okay, good.
My 8-year-old.
Oh, that's great. Good. I recognize this place.
Yeah, she was the lead mouse.
That's fantastic.
I mean, she was just, and she's so proud of herself. It's fun to watch them at every age, but man, it's so fun when they see them start to, you know, get confidence and get out there.
Fantastic. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really
doing that. I had a we had our Christmas this weekend with our my son and his family, and anyway, we got the grandbaby all weekend, which was awesome. You know, only what 10 weeks old, so
little 10 weeks.
Little
peanut
started to smile. You know, yeah.
They're so great, aren't they?
It's been good. So far, so good.
I know. Oh, yeah. It's a wonderful. It's a blessing. It's all a blessing. Goes fast, though. You know, everybody always told you, you know, you always say, oh, those old people, they always say that. Goes fast. Goes fast. Yeah, well, it does. It goes real fast.
So, anyway, that's what we got going on now. We're going to figure out how to integrate his book, my book, start to try to figure out how to, you know, I'm going to help him, first of all, do a book review.
Yep.
We'll go from there. And a lot of this will kick off after the first of the year. Try to lay a lot of the groundwork. She'll start working on plans, reaching out to some of these clients. Then when she kicks into the FAA program in April 1st, she should have at least have had conversations with and have gotten to know a pretty fair number of that segment of his book. You know,
right.
Got another partnership opportunity with a group out of Macon, but they are not actually giving her any clients. They're putting her on their number. And so, you know, in a way that she can share in the process, but they're still their clients.
It helps with her revenues, but gets her to help her graduate, but doesn't get her anything that she owns.
Right. She doesn't have any real clients of her own. With this, we wanted to have.
She'll have her own. Clients. Yeah. And that's what you should have. Yeah, people say, well, I help them graduate. Yeah, but once they graduate, after 2 years, are they going to be able to fly on their own? That's the key. Are you preparing them for that, or are you just kicking them out the nest, you know?
Yeah, now here's a success story. Maybe you might think I thought it was a success story, so I hope you'll think it's the same success. I gave Johnny a $100,000 account that I'd never really connected with these people. They've been doing their own stuff on their own. He meshed with them. They had a college savings plan, worked on that, and suggested doing a financial plan. They were open to it. Uncovered $3 million in assets.
Where was it?
Now some of it's still in their retirement plan, so they won't be able to get that. I think initially he's probably going to get $300,000 or so from a bank account. And then they've got some other, you know, just pockets of investments in different places. So, they've been doing things on their own. I remember if it was Fidelity or Schwab or something like that, where they've had quite a bit of it. But they were just open to do it, and they just connected. They hit it off. So, like, you know, good for you. That's what, you know.
So things are okay there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Things are fine. I just, I've got to figure out how to talk to my buddy about it. Like, how do I broach the subject? Yeah. You know,
you're getting past Halloween. Just don't have Halloween ever again.
Never have Halloween again. No shit. That was weird. I don't know. Just to add conversations. He's been great ever since. I mean, and he's definitely a little torn up about the whole thing. I mean, I don't know if I told you the rest of the story. I mean, but he's really had to hide that part of his life, and you know, really at his parents' request. So it's got to be difficult for him. It's got to be difficult for both of them. You know, trying to figure out what's going to be the, you know, if you drop what you perceive as a bomb, is that going to be a, how big is the blast area, you know? I don't know. I don't think either one of them knows.
Well, it's hard because what are you going to not be in love with somebody or not feel something, you know? You're going to feel it no matter what, so you got to be who you are.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, be that person, but be that person, close the door. You know, you don't have to stay in a closet, but you can stay in the bedroom.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, I told you that story, that big producer up there in Atlanta. And my boss came to him and he said, my manager came to him and he said, hey, you got to know who this kid is. Do you know the name Todd Emily? He's a big producer. Anyway, he's great, but never being recorded. But so my manager says to him, hey, the firm is sponsoring this, you know, it's the, we're sponsoring the gay, lesbian, whatever, you know, thing. He said, I was wondering if that's something you might like to attend. And he was very offended. You know, and he said, you know, the day that I want my firm to come into my bedroom, I'll let this. Basically, he added a lot of expletives, but he said, the day I want the firm to come into my bedroom, I'll certainly let you know. Otherwise, keep your distance, you know, kind of thing. But my manager was like, whoa, I get it, you know. And so he got directly the opposite. He thought he was being inclusive, and he had just, you know, crossed over a line the guy didn't want him to touch, you know, so. It's like none of the firm's business what I do, you know.
I love that.
So,
don't you? That's where it should be.
Oh, yeah. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
We're all good friends with this guy. We love him. He's a He's fantastic. He's so funny. He's a great producer. He's just a great guy. You know, it's sure. Like a good friend.
Yeah, and that's the way it should stay. And hopefully, you gotta let Johnny get his feet underneath him and get some success, and then he can bomb the world. But I think that's a pretty good example for him. Maybe even have a conversation with him.
Well, and that's what I had thought too. And I mentioned that I would set that up if it wanted to. And so I think he was a little overwhelmed at first.
Yeah.
So,
but down the road, if he needs to have a little guidance, there's a potential mentor that's navigated that world and seems to have it in pretty good context, right?
Really does. Yeah.
So that's pretty great. I'm glad that looked, that's one of those situations that looks like a bomb went off and it really was a dud. Good.
I may have told you there's an advisor team here that they have a sibling that is, she's lesbian. She has her own partner and, two children now together. But he had no idea. He was afraid that they were going to judge him. He had no idea that they've already dealt with this with a family member.
Oh, wow.
Like, oh, my goodness, wow. So he had all of a sudden his respect level for them went way up, you know.
Oh, isn't that great?
Cool. Yeah.
Yeah, anyway. It's all under the covers. It's everywhere, though. You know, and the more you get – you know, the more people come out, the more you find out that the world is the same no matter where you are. You can be in a small southern town or you can be in New York City and it's still the same stuff, you know?
Right. You're right. Yeah.
So
well,
I would say that, you know, suspect, prospect, customer, client thing is, that'd be a good project for the new year and put everybody on it. Everybody's working towards it and just
moving along. Yeah, tell me the order again, Rob, because I may have written them down wrong.
All right, so it's suspect, prospect, customer, client, advocate, ambassador. And to be in the ambassador's club, you just have to bring in an introduction, becomes a client each year, each calendar year. And I've got a guy that is really reluctant to ask for introductions. I said, then you got to make a big deal out of the Ambassador's Club. I said, people will do things for recognition. You want to reinforce good behavior. So yeah, it's nice to send a note and it's nice to send a fruit basket, but have a dinner. You can have a private dinner and thank them, or you can have a public dinner where you bring together the couples that have made the Ambassadors Club and just recognize them and say, look, I'd love to have you next year. Basically, bring me an introduction next year and we'll have this dinner again.
Yeah.
And they want to help you. It's just a question of you got to ask. You know, you got to get out there. It's like me. Got to get out there in traffic.
Yeah, that's a good one. Well, also, I think I'm going to try to talk to Dennis about these kind of things, too. We may need to continue to get you involved in some meetings, you know, where we're trying to get, because he's book smart on Supernova and hasn't really done it. You know, he understands it. He kind of gets it, but
this is your guy. This is the guy you're going to buy the book from.
Dennis. Yeah. Dennis.
Yeah.
He's one of my partners. So it's, and I'm proud of him. He's actually taking today and tomorrow off work. The guy rarely ever takes a day off work. He might work a shortened day. But he is virtually always in the office, always.
Yeah, he's an old school.
Old school guy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's my brother. Okay. My brother did the same thing. And in the last 2 years, because my brother's retirement was based on the last 2 years of production, he was doing about 600,000 at about, 200 million in assets, or maybe 350 million in assets. He went from 600,000 to 2 million.
Paid him off of those, right?
Yeah. He said, I don't know why I didn't do this before. I said, well, it's not like I've been preaching it. It's not like you don't have a book sitting in front of you. Rob Knapp's name on it.
Right, exactly.
He would have my books and give them out, but would he do it? No. You give them out to everybody. This is what you should do. Do what my brother tells you. Well, do you do it? No. Too much work. That's the answer. Too much work. Have to be too organized. So I've got a team that I'm putting through similar situation in they're a merger. I coached him. They're in Washington D.C. And so two guys came together. They ended up being big producers, right? And now I think they're doing like 3 million each, 6 million now together. But they just hired me to coach them as a team to get into, to really do Supernova again. So I'm putting them straight through the whole program again. It's probably something we should do. Okay.
I think that might be right up the, yeah.
Just start over and get your whole team involved and make sure, you know, it'll help you get back to where you want to be. And cause second time through, frankly, you're going to do so much better and he'll do better and he'll get it. And he'll be able to generate some nice revenues and leave on an uptick.
Yeah, because we've got basically a 2 to 3 year runway here, you know,
right,
where we can get going well. What I was telling him is like, if we do it now, clients will be in the habit of already doing these things, talking to other people. And when you're stepping away, it'll be so natural, you know, it won't be a.
The last thing you want is for that client to say, well, you know, I've got this guy over at Morgan, at Merrill Lynch, you know, that I've been friends with for a long time, and this is just an opportunity to go with him. You don't want that. You don't even want that entering their mind.
No, especially when he's going to get paid on the assets for so long, you know.
Right. And if you don't keep them, you don't get paid.
Exactly. That's right.
So it's probably a time for good customer service, especially if we're going to go through another X months or even a year more of this garbage. We're going to have to wow them with service.
Yeah, how to get them through. Give me indigestion. I don't want to go through night.
I know, me either. It's like, oh, God. You know, it's not bad when you're a new FA and your clients are getting killed, but you don't have any money, so you don't care. That was me in 73, 74, 5. Now I'm one of their clients, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Every downtick means money.
It's been a brutal year. I'm hoping that I'm always hoping that we're, I think one of the biggest issues in our business is that, you know, these strategists that we have, I mean, I've been doing this for 30 years now. Sometimes we have really good strategists. Sometimes we have really bad strategists. Most of the time we have pure mess strategists. So we happen to have one right now, Mike Wilson, who is fantastic on the U.S. market. He's been great for the last, you know, 18, 24 months. And dead wrong on international, horrible on emerging markets. That doesn't make the press at all. But he has been right in the U.S., and he's very bearish, at least for the start of 2023.
I know.
And I think we've got quite a bit of downside here left before we ultimately turn back up late 2023 and into 2024. So
right. I know, I follow him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
He's pretty, I tend to like the other guys that are Bulls, but he's been right.
He's been right, yeah. We had Adam Parker, though, back in, and Adam Parker still makes it to the CNBC. I see him quite a bit, but he used to be our chief strategist back in, you know, the 08, 09 crisis and all that. And 2011, remember we had that big correction? Well, in October, he put out a piece, basically said, you know, market's going to get hit again. You know, we're going to go down a lot, and could not have been more wrong, you know.
Right. And then everybody's in cash and misses the market, and you get, I got to go. Okay.
All right, Rob.
See you, buddy.
You're the best. Okay. See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.